Yeah. All the membranes that have colluded to support complex Homo sapien life form are right. Are fragile, is maybe you could say fragile. They have a certain kind of durability and elasticity, right? For this, but I think their margins are very thin, right? The margin for sustaining, right, what we consider biologic systems, is a very, very thin margin of cooperating, right, events like the distance from the sun, the envelope, the electromagnetic envelope that surrounds Earth, right, as a container for its oxygen, nitrogen, carbon-rich atmosphere, right, the gravity, the oceans, the currents, the poles, the magnetic balances, right, the ice fields. It's remarkable. And the capacity for oxygen reoxygenation and carbon sequestration, mm-hmm. right? The pH of the ocean, mm-hmm. right? The pH of the body.
Mm-hmm. They're really hairy.
Hmm?
They're hairy.
Yeah, yeah.
They're just right on the cusp
yeah,
of what
right.
creates life.
Yeah, that's what's so weird, is that all of these elements, right, colluding together for this life form to appear from the Darwinian or the biologic, you know, archaeological record, is like, you gotta be kidding. Really kidding me. And then the notion that the preciseness of all of this collusion could and should be replicated, how many...
Forever.
Other, well, not just here replicated forever, but replicated elsewhere in the so-called observable universe. The likelihood of any kind of repetition or replication of what has occurred on what we call Earth is, you'd be better off buying lottery tickets between now and the day you die.
Well, I mean, there is the morphic idea, the morphic resonance idea, you know.
Yes.
Of where there's one... more and more and more can proliferate, even if it's not physically connected.
Right, yeah. So then you've got the quantum entanglement 100th monkey theme operating again, but now across stellar mm-hmm. distances, right? Yeah, replication of carbon-based or silicon-based life across immeasurable distances.
Carl Sagan would get into this stuff where he... would imagine all kinds of different life forms, intelligent life forms that
right.
could be, that could form around other, you know, like a silicone-based society.
Yeah,
or
right,
instead,
right.
Something like that.
Yeah. And it's always interesting to play the consciousness game to appreciate that consciousness, which is not a thing, right, is the foundation for the biologic expression. The biologic expression is not the foundation for the consciousness. So that's more morphic and quantum entangled.
Would you use the word animate? Animation?
Well, sure, yeah, why not, right? Yeah, I mean, this is pretty animated. Eckhart Tolle was talking to whom exactly before he wrote The Power of Now, or it became, you know, viral, right?
Yeah. was essentially homeless until they hit, or close to.
Yeah, I mean, you know, his natural genius and skill for writing and articulating all of these, you know, neo-Buddhist memes and writing them in a contemporary vernacular, right? He could have easily starved to death or frozen to death or been hit by a bus, and no one would have any idea that he had a cathartic revelation one day and then sat on a park bench. We can get a feel for just how remarkably seductive and alluring, right, imagination is, consciousness is, geopolitical events are, the media that reports them, the talking heads, the celebrities, the voices of authority, whether they're in the field of entertainment or science, right, education, politics, you name it. And it's this huge cacophony of voices, right, contributing and participating. Even these neo-atheists, you know, that have become very popular, right? The guys that talk about the absence of free will, and, right? That God is a ruse and stuff like that, right? Sam Harris and others of his ilk. And then we're seeing all of these, Western awakened persons, whether here in the United States or Europe, a handful in South America, right? Germany, Spanish-speaking, all over the place. Jamaican, Muji, right? Rastafarian awakened guy. And all the radio shows and interview programs. Ooh. You know. The genesis of yogic endeavor, yoga seeding the West with the early, you know, pioneers that influenced the Beat Generation and, of course, the hippie generation, and et cetera, et cetera. Now everyone that went to see Neem Karoli Baba in the 60s are in their mid-70s. Yeah. Right? Yeah. It was 50 years ago that they were there, and they were just out of school. They might have dropped out, or they might have graduated. Maybe they didn't, right? So they were in their teens and 20s in the mid-60s. And that's how many years ago? 50 years ago, right? Yeah. So all those guys, girls and boys, that were there, that were seeded by that event, right, are now ARP.
A lot of them sold out anyway.
Sure. Yeah.
They kind of put that behind them.
Well,
put that up to youthful folly.
Or they may still be in, you know, deliciously invested in it as a devotional path, and get together and have food and song and wine and whatever. It's not clear how many of them, what would you call it, you know, woke up, or we were even ever interested in waking up. Many of them were just.
It's also just a social thing. You know,
many of them were just interested in having Neem Karoli Baba in their life as a, you know, a mentor par excellence, right? As a guru and intervener par excellence in the karma of their lives. And so that they had their own access to miracles or a benevolent paternalistic influence, right? Dead or alive, was enough.
Well, there was a program on about this guy, and I don't remember ever hearing about him. I was young, but he was big in California. He was a big guy. He was like 6'5" or something. Like 6'6".
Uh huh.
And they called him Father or something. I mean, it was a very paternalistic thing.
Yeah.
But he was just trying. Trying this, trying that.
Yeah.
They take the whole crowd with them, you know, and just did not seem to be any authenticity to him.
Yeah.
But he was good.
Right, right, good.
He was a good con.
Yeah, sure.
You know, he conned himself.
Yeah.
But, there are lots of people that that were into that. They needed a father figure.
Yes, yes. I mean, that's clear also in the culture, right?
Searching the alternative way of life. An end in itself.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's a great way to have a life.
Yes, keep looking.
Yeah. I mean, novelty and
think you're right.
Cults and charismatic persons and fun things to do. And
an enormous amount of time, sir.
Yeah. And, you know, it's even fun to look at, you know, who's the con artist? You know, what was the con? Maybe nothing at all. It was just a great way to pass the time. You know, there's always collateral damage. Even if you're, you know, a Jain, there's collateral damage. Even if you're the most committedly peaceful human being in the world, where you walk naked and you sweep the dirt in front of you so that you don't step on an insect, even there's collateral damage. So I don't think it's escapable.
Well, another word for that is unexpected consequence.
That's right.
So when you're sweeping the dirt, you don't know how many bugs are burning. You just can't know.
You can't. You cannot micro or macro manage the curious nature of
what this is.
Of what this is, of creation.
So you might as well be a samurai.
That could be true. Yeah, you may as well be a samurai. You know. Samurai Taylor. Well, I don't know. How do you figure out whether your sentiment, your education, your training, and your conditioning is, you know, of the most refined nature? Even if you are a well-traveled person or deeply immersed in historical, right, poignancy of culture, and therefore your bandwidth and your scope is very, very wide, very embracing or embracive, still, you know, how do you account for your own personality, your own consciousness, your own value system, how you conduct yourself in the world?
My notion of that is we're a function of cultural construct, which we absorb right from the moment we're born.
Or conceived.
Yeah. During those 9 months, you're still picking it up.
Yeah.
And then you show up. And it's already figured out. We didn't figure this out. We just functioning in a more or less better or worse.
It's maybe fun to have some disruptive encounters.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Well, why do you think you went to India?
Yeah, right. That's right.
Well, that was that bad.
Yeah, we're looking for a disruptive encounter.
Yeah.
Right? To jar us out of the dream, the conformist dream.
Well, we've gotten a hint somewhere that there's something more, there's something else going on. This is not the only way to look at things. And so that curiosity.
In our living experience, we experience the weirdness of it. How can you be at peace with the fact that everything disappears.
You can't be, can you?
No. So what the fuck now? Maybe there's an answer somewhere. We started looking.
Yeah. That's right.
That's good.
I mean, that's one of those discontinuities, right?
Yeah.
Right on time, right on schedule. Disruption, right? Disruptive catharsis. Yeah.
The basis of our experience.
Yeah. When we look,
yeah,
then we might be treated to a very disruptive view that completely interferes with the inertia of superstition and the inertia of worship and the inertia of belief and the inertia of cultural conformity. Yeah.
If you really look, you get robbed of all that shit. It'll disappear.
Yeah.
I feel so naked. I don't know what's left.
Hmm. Yeah, that's why you could say weird symptoms can occur. Weird symptoms can occur. Physiological symptoms and psychological symptoms and visionary symptoms. And, you know, catharses of despair or confusion or hilarity or all kinds of things happen. As the disruptive catharsis, you know, gathers steam. Wow.
Forgive me. I'm chuckling. That's just a thought. Rosemary and I exchange consideration for one another. So she has gone to many landmark events as a companion.
Yeah.
She's going to other events. Like all this weird shit. She calls me a woo-woo.
Yeah, oh, yeah, you're a total woo-woo.
I'm
yeah.
A total woo-woo.
Yeah.
And she is willing to put her toe in it.
Yeah.
Not immersed in it. And so you have to pay for that sometimes.
Absolutely.
Saturday night we went out. She's got some new friends she plays mahjong with.
Oh, nice.
And they had a cocktail party. Could I shoot myself?
Yes.
Please.
Right. You could always swallow mahjong tiles.
There were this hors d'oeuvres and drinks. And,
yeah.
And the chit-chat, it's been so long since I've been in a history, a recounting of experiences.
Oh, yes.
With enthusiasm.
Yes.
With great spirit.
Yeah.
And I just look like a deadbeat.
Yes.
Nothing.
You know, I can't do it anymore.
What the fuck do I care about what happened?
Wow.
What? What I want to say about that?
That's pretty woo woo.
Or to be interested in what they're
recalling.
With
the most excited and enthusiasm and sharing in the humor of it.
Yeah.
Something.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
Sure. But of course, she thinks I come over here and I'm out of my fucking gourd.
She's right.
She's right.
She wins.
She has a point.
Right. You lose.
She's willing to participate in the picnic. She's done it before. It's amazing.
Yeah, well.
This disruptive momentum, this living catharsis of consciousness reconsidering itself, right? Let me reconsider for a moment. let's take kind of a different look at some of the foundational presumptions of time and space and birth and causality and continuity and consequences and karma, right? And Big Bang and all of these stuff, plus all this wonderful ethereal, surreal ephemera of what's going on in the, you know, the political, socio-geopolitical landscape, blah, 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 right? All this stuff. I mean, all the conspiracies are all in, they're all true, they're all untrue. I mean, it's just, it's amazing, right? Where we can go. Or an athlete that trains 5-6 hours a day, right? A musician that does the same, right? People whose life energy is incredibly concentrated on honing marvelous magical skills. Mm-hmm. And their interface with the outside world is through an event, right? A concert, a TED Talk, whatever the hell it is. It's very uncommon for what we call, you know, a human to reconsider from scratch without superstition the prescient observation of so-called present reality, the meandering nature, the exploratory, creative, evocative nature of consciousness itself, dreaming in place. So the cocktail party is not focused on this miracle. Instead, it goes anecdotal. It goes into a flaring hysteria.
Doesn't even pretend to do otherwise.
No. Yeah.
Even though you can't separate them, virtual reality from reality, once you conjure up that notion,
yeah,
there are activities which are heightened expressions of non-existent.
Sure. Yep.
That's chattering, using words.
Heightened expressions of what?
The heightened expression of the non-existence of anything. You see it occurring.
Vaporware.
There's nothing to get hooked on. It's so.
Yeah. The revelation of yourself as vapor, you know, is either life-changing or somehow, you know, we can be avoidant.
Or depressed, because we don't, you know, we go so far and we see that part, but we don't hang out with it the right way. We medicate or we, you know.
Oh, I get a big kick out of it.
Then I enjoy it.
I don't ever have. Depression disappears when you realize there is no such thing. How can you be depressed?
It can.
It just vanishes.
It can. It does.
Yeah.
It's not guaranteed, but it can.
It can flash, but it doesn't have any more duration than anything else. You have to keep regenerating it.
Even that observation, you know, spoken or shared with a depressed person with the utmost care, might not land.
Well, that's why I'm tongue-tied.
Yes.
I can't say anything.
That's right. Yeah, no, you shut up.
I just watch it. I'm quiet and just watch it.
Yeah,
What can you say?
Yes. Yeah.
How about, do you fucking guys know that you're living in a fantasy of recollection and not a goddamn thing is alive and exists?
Oh, God. You could go there.
Yeah. Good luck.
Good luck with that. I know. You could go there.
How many parties are you going to invite?
Somebody will call the animal control. Someone will call animal control.
So.
Yeah, it wreaks havoc with friendships and long-standing relationships and casual dinner parties and.
It fucks everything up.
It does.
Absolutely does.
Yeah, and, you know, somebody asks you for your opinion, and you give it. And they're like, what's that all about? Whatever, you know.
Well, a sense of humor is always available. Like this. Because whatever it's doing itself. God knows I'm not going to reconstruct it and alter it.
Good luck, yeah.
And whatever's happening, it's amazing. No matter how.
Rest in the Zen moment.
Yeah.
Completely rest in the Zen moment.
Call me quiet. Call me a bore.
Yeah.
It's okay.
That's cool.
Watch the sleeping. You don't want to poke the sleeping tiger too hard.
It is tough, though. It seems like you just can't go anywhere and find any solace, so to speak. And you sit down today, sitting down, actually went into the cafeteria and sat down with these people in the group, and man, I just didn't have a thing to say, you know. Just nothing to contribute. I mean, it's on my car.
You're a dope
boy. I mean, it's all the same. I don't know. I just.
Well, the texture of reality, you know, if I can speak with some hubris about it all, is it's immersive. Mm. It delivers a kind of confidence of being. Mm. That is not necessarily conversational, because it's textural,
yeah.
Right?
It's not
an extension of one's persona, right?
Well, I think that, I mean, you know, we start to have a conversation ourselves here, and I think it can be conversational. It's just that there seems to be a need to physiologically tone it down, just to sort of come to a resting place.
It
comfortable.
It's a chicken or egg, right?
Yeah.
So even if you do have the experience of sitting on a cushion, whether it's TM or the friends meeting or whatever, right, doesn't necessarily mean that you've been invited into a certain kind of physiologic receptivity,
sure,
where you can dream with a higher degree of lucidity. And so it's a very wonderful challenge, right? It's a great challenge, mm-hmm, to put out an invitation and see who might show up, you know, once or twice or more than that, and begin to reinforce, mm-hmm, right, the metabolic aspect, the rhythm, the sound, the speech, the vocabulary, the implications of the vocabulary, so that, right, we can find a harmonic which permits us to feel this and join the carrier wave. Yeah, I mean, that's part of the thrill, the challenge, right, of feeling this for yourself firsthand, direct encounter, then discovering just organically, naturally, how you might be gifted to convey what it is you're feeling, what it is that you're seeing, and enroll, which is a fine word, or invite, you know, others to get a taste of it. And it seems very organic that as we become more nourished by the feeling, right? By the metabolic mm-hmm. harmonic. By an appreciation of subtlety appearing in consciousness mm-hmm. on time, right on time, in so-called real time, that it's immersive, it's nourishing, it's funny, it's got a sense of humor. It's loaded with serendipity, right? And seduction.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? And so, and we can actually feel that. It's like, whoa, seduction is present in the biosphere, not even, you know, necessarily focused with each other or between men and women or, you know, whatever the
just
sexual.
Happening.
Yeah, I mean, the seduction is just, you know, I mean, it's in the plants, it's in the air, it's in the temperature, it's in the light, it's in every, right, geometric vector that tickles you somehow, that touches the sense plenums. And the sense plenums are made of the same seductive, right, stuff as what appears to be the stimulus.
The difference I will try to...
You're made out of the Divine Mother, you see.
Is that all of that... initially constitutes an accumulation of thoughts that look like what you're calling samsara.
Okay.
That piece, all of those, the same thing that you're talking about.
Right.
Wells up.
It does. It
creates this huge experience.
Yes. Yep.
Which has all this drama in it.
Yes. Yes.
In all that happens here.
Yes.
Not only do you relieve yourself of your personality and this ego that we're talking about,
uh-huh.
but with it goes all the fucking drama.
Yes.
That's connected to all the thoughts and experiences.
Uh-huh.
All the emotions, all the psychology.
Yep.
What the fuck's that all about?
Yes. That's right.
If that begins to vaporize,
uh-huh.
well, what are we left with? What a fucking funny drama this is.
Yep.
So it changes from a drama.
Yeah.
A drama.
Yeah. Right. Right.
To a drama. Like
right.
From TV.
A glorious expression of inestimable wonder.
Absolute unencumbrance.
Mm-hmm.
Can continue to perceive, even imagine, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it doesn't take purchase.
That's exactly. That's the point.
It does not take purchase of anything at all arising in its own purview.
Mm-hmm. That's not normal.
I hear you.
Fucking abnormal. And that's what happens here. You get fucked up. So you can see the glory of it all.
Well, we're lucky.
Yeah. So it's an uphill struggle for
a common
ordinary human.
It's amazing that it doesn't. I haven't seen it anywhere else.
Mm-hmm.
Really? I mean, it must be, and certainly, I don't mean, you know, we got our buddies, you know, Hederman and that guy, and Peter, and...
You were at the retreat in North Carolina,
yeah.
Right?
Sure.
How was that? What was the atmosphere there?
Well, it was somewhat there, I mean, but there is this feel of I don't know, competition or a challenge, or it's not real refined or whatever you want to say. But it's certainly better than hanging out at the cocktail party.
Yeah,
it was definitely better.
Right.
Huge
friends of a feather.
That's exactly right. Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah, sure.
All interested in the same stuff that would be totally disinteresting to most people.
Yeah.
But it didn't seem to have the bottomless
depth. But the risk is, don't you dare make this into something, because you're going to be right back with the rest of them.
You know, when a so-called enlightened personality starts riffing on their personal history, how could anyone really hold any meaningful interest in it? Because it's referential, it's secondhand, it's the tension of celebrity.
And those couple of people,
right,
that could do that, and Hederman was one of them, and the other guy was Tom Snyder?
The fiddle player?
Yeah, the fiddle player.
Yeah.
Last name Snyder. And he was like that. But he didn't stick around long. And he didn't really want to engage people that much, you know.
No, he was telling stories. I listened to his talk.
Well.
Or one from a year ago or something.
I don't think it was the one you were at. Yeah.
Yeah, there was a recording of him, and I was like, nice, great stories.
Although he did do a little bit of that, but mostly what he did, if I can recall correctly, wasn't so much. And so what he had to say was a little far out, even for that crowd.
Good.
Because he made references, you know, like he had this big staff, and he would just like drop the staff. And like that was indicative of something.
Yeah, yeah, sure.
Well, okay, that's a stretch.
It's a prop.
It's a prop, but it was a stretch for people, and he was putting it in such a way that, you know, him, like I say, he was good. It was good to have him around, but yeah, that whole thing was good. Didn't put on too much.
We don't. I mean, obviously, we say a lot. Mm-hmm. Maybe we repeat stuff a lot. Maybe. But it's not a matter of, you know, creating an instruction set. It's really what raising the bar on the quality of your direct encounter, mm-hmm, as intelligence, peering into the nature of intelligence. Mm. Now, some people might say that's a little too heady, you know, too conceptual. But I have to beg to differ. It's not. I would say it's a very full endocrine engagement. It's an endocrinological engagement with the entirety of you as a remarkable subtle vibratory field. And your vibratory field is not just physiologic, right? I mean, it's auric, it's subtle, right? It's photonic, right? The microcurrent coming off of synaptic activity is real, right? That microcurrent permeates the space. We are quantum entangled, so the microcurrents that may be appearing in any one of us is going to be available to others of us, right? The softening of the breath or relaxation, let's say, in the cardiac rhythm, relaxation in the cranial rhythm, is all shareable, shared, even though we don't have, a vocabulary for it, right? But still, there's a certainly translucence. And the intelligence is not grasping, right? It's not overwhelmed by having to make meaning or to have a takeaway. Yeah. So there's a smoothing out. We're not compulsed to entertain each other through, let me tell you about what happened, let me, you know.
I still can be like that.
We can all be like that. Hell, I mean, any one of us instantly can, you know, turn that on, be, you know, anecdotal and funny and tell a story a thousand different ways. So, yeah, I think this is a nice experiment in...
an experiment in terror.
An experiment in total terror. That's what I had in mind. Right. Sure, the whole human drama field is that, isn't it? Making something out of looking at nothing, or nothing, or just nothing. Making, yeah, much ado about nothing. Yeah.
To really do that is different from the thought of it.
Absolutely. Yes.
That's a different category.
Yes, absolutely. That's why the challenge, the operating challenge for what we refer to as inquiry into awakening is direct encounter.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right. Because we're all good at saying, oh, that sounds great, and I think I'll give it a whirl on Saturday between, you know, after I'm done with the bowling league. And you're like, well, good luck. Good luck. I hope you make it to Saturday and that you remember to give this a whirl after, you know, after you've bowled a nice handicap. Yeah. That's why if
it's
we...
not something you can get primed for. You know?
No. No, we must make ourselves or discover that we can be. Indeed, doesn't need to be any difference between those two. Available for direct encounter presently. Mm. It's not a philosophy club, right?
No way.
Yeah, there's no homework or liturgy to take home. There's no Nam-myoho Renge Kyo chanted for an hour and a half nonstop. Right?
You can do all those things.
You may.
Have a ball.
Yeah, have a ball.
Frank, so you're 4 o'clock. What's
3 4 o'clock?
3 or 4. Well, you said 4, so
I didn't say 4 initially. I said 3.
Oh, did you?
I said 4.
Yes, oh. I said 4. I like that.
So people show up at 5.
Yeah, people come 6 o'clock.
Yeah.
Who cares?
Right.
Come whenever you come. Really pleasant and easy.
You're in Tresham. Yeah.
Just down the road.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you. See you.
Pleasure. Thank you.
It's every bit as sweet as among these people, this group is. Yeah. Professor Rosemary crazy how to tell stories about him. I have no idea how many people come. No idea what food. We have a couple dishes we're going to make. I don't know. When I plant my garden, you know, whatever attracts me, I keep no record of what tomatoes planted where.
Right.
They're all just going to appear.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, every year I'm going to love whatever it is that comes up.
Yeah.
And be awed by it. And I won't know what it is.
Nice.
And I just keep replanting.
That's great.
Why the fuck should I know, keep a record? Why should I kill myself and rob myself of the pleasure of discovery in the garden?
Good point. Good approach.
What? I'm going to be a machine? And take nature and control it. And no matter how great the fucking tomato is,
right?
How many of them can you eat?
That's right. Yeah.
So succeed in one variety. Now, how long are you going to do that?
Well,
I can't remember what the hell I plant where.
accounting, then farming, then refrigeration was the death of us all.
Yeah, preservation.
Yeah. Right. Once we could do agriculture and create yields and storage mechanisms. Mm-hmm. I mean, the accounting came long before. I mean, they were doing accounting with cuneiform, right? Mm-hmm. How many shekels you got? Right. How many goats you got? I'll trade you, you know, a couple of wives for a couple of, you know, bales of hay, mm-hmm. right? I mean, nomadic cultures maybe didn't have such a strong emphasis on accounting.
No.
It wasn't necessary. Nor was...
I had a share.
Yeah. And there wasn't, you know, time for agriculture, right? And therefore no time for building superstructures, right? Yeah. Fortressing.
Yeah.
Right. Whether food yields or weapons or people.
Right.
Right? Yeah.
I want to acknowledge you for the gift that you've been. So you've given an articulation to something I can trace back, all the way back.
Yeah.
That I was driven by, but didn't comprehend it.
Nice, yeah.
I could not fucking identify with any group.
That's right.
Do the dump in all the way.
Yeah, yeah.
However, I did put my foot in.
Right.
Only one.
Yeah.
In an enormous number of activities.
Sure.
Inquiring and searching.
Yeah.
Even my business, I do absolutely not a fucking thing to promote it.
Right.
I don't ever advertise.
Right.
Do nothing. Because maybe it'll go away.
Sure.
But it won't.
Yeah, really, it won't. It's not about to let you go, is it?
No. So it's like the intuitive impulse that I seem to be guided by.
Right.
To not get caught up in a path or a way.
Yeah.
It makes sense.
Sure.
God damn it makes sense.
Yes.
So, even my compulsive behavior.
Right.
Makes sense.
Sure.
Because I can compartmentalize it.
Yeah.
It's not universally compulsive.
No. No, you can't be, right.
Right.
Yeah.
It's just a dimension.
Yes, that's right. It's karmic flavor.
Yes, it's an additional coloration.
Yep. Yeah. I took a walk the last week with someone, and he was recounting some of the, you know, dramas and circumstances of his life, mm-hmm. according to his personality and his value system and flares that he thought I might be interested in or attracted
right.
to, right? And I just brought up, you know, some simple questions of, well, thank you so much for, you know, sharing sure. such a tapestry. And I said, is there any suspicion? You know, is there anywhere in that story where you have some suspicion or you have some doubt about how your karma is playing out, right? And at first, yeah, there was. You could feel the certain kind of shame or disappointment, right? Mm-hmm. Self-assessment, consternation about how the karma field looked. And I said, okay, you know, that's your observation. I'm not, you know, I'm not laying a trip on this. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, hey, this, look at all the stuff. That's your karma field. How are you with it?
Yeah.
So the first pass, you could tell that there was some suspicion or some disappointment that was his karma field. Mm. And then curiously, you know, as we looked at it a little more, he had a kind of a little mini revelation.
Yeah.
where he referred to himself as a cosmic whore. And I was like, wow, that's fucking beautiful. You're a cosmic whore. And so all of this weird karma, the relationships and the, you know, we won't get into all the nefarious details. You and I know them very well, right? Mm-hmm. We're all just absolute organic aspects of his fundamental reflection as a cosmic whore. And I was like, well, good for you. Well, then there is no suspicion remaining. There's no disappointment at all.
It's all working out.
You self-selected in the most, right, authentic, self-reflective manner, saw that, oh, my God, I'm a cosmic whore. And it's like, cool, now you're good.
Yeah.
You're good with it. And just that acceptance, the humor that was in it, even though, of course, there's a lot of drama and, you know, pain and disappointment, and most likely there will continue to be, right? Extremes.
Mm. A moment of liberation.
That was a moment of liberation, just to self-reflect that deeply into his own karma, into his own consciousness, yeah. It's like, well played. Wish I could do the same. And we have no idea, you know, whether that revelation, which otherwise may have hidden behind many stones and trees and shadows, by having the revelation, it kind of like creates permission for it to mutate.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
It only takes a little break.
It's homeopathic.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
The smallest homeopathic dose of that kind of undefended revelation about one's own nature is a completion. It's like a path completion.
Mm-hmm.
And creates a vibratory field for that karma to shift.
Mm-hmm.
I would say to become perhaps a little more refined, rather than participating in certain kinds of waves of introverted and extroverted suffering.
Mm.
Be curious to see if any of that occurs.
Mm. Going on in Israel, the Palestinians.
Yeah.
It occurred to me that they love it. They fucking love it. Both of them. They define themselves by that activity and their passion for it. There's a lot of wailing and gnashing of teeth and people dying.
People are dying, yes.
Suffering loss.
Yes.
But, God, if they didn't love it, don't you think they would figure out a way to stop it?
Hmm. Yes, one wonders, right.
What?
Yeah.
What are you doing?
Yeah, what are you doing? Yeah, that's a good question for, you know, the whole of the species. What are we
doing?
Yeah. What are the engines behind this miraculous mosh pit of acting out?
Hmm.
And acquisition and conflict.
Do you know how many times they've gone to war and had a truce?
Oh, I couldn't count them.
You can't count them.
No.
It's a cycle.
Yeah, right.
They can't stand not acting out and getting whatever kick they get out of acting out.
Yeah.
And then they have to stop for a while and rest.
Yeah, sure.
Until it builds up and then do it again.
Yeah. Right, it's like, you know, tectonic plates, isn't it?
Yes. It's human plates.
It's like the same force, of tectonic plates or lava flows.
That location on the planet over there, in Iraq and the Mesopotamian Valley.
Yeah.
All that shit. There's some charge going on.
What is it there?
Wow.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Right. Yeah, there's some geologic, cosmic
Euphrates and the
yeah
Fertile Crescent.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's some real powerful geometry there, right?
It's almost like they can't think any. Their brains are short-circuited.
Yeah, yeah.
Living there just completely fucks you up.
Maybe the Gaiac triangle, mm-hmm. like as a Bermuda Triangle.
Yeah.
There's a Gaiac triangle in that region of the world, which is locking all of the inhabitants into a certain kind of madness. Right? And it's not really Islamic or Judaic. Even those are symptoms of something that's more organic and profound. Yeah, right. Yeah, that's right. It's a geoharmonic archetypal madness, and it can't be escaped if a human is living anywhere near there.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, they have a wailing wall.
Yeah.
Who else has a wailing wall?
Yeah, no one.
No.
Yeah,
one.
No, there's no place else.
Nobody's where.
Who knows, Machu Picchu? I mean, I don't know. You know.
Well, it could be, but we.
Yeah. Don't. Right.
It's not as active, let's say.
No, that's right.
That spot.
Yeah. Oh yeah, Jean Klein was there years ago teaching in Israel, and someone told me a story that, you know, how did he feel about the Wailing Wall? And he said something like, "Oh, so much complaining." The sage, right?
Yeah.
The sage walked on by, right? The sage walked on by, the sage that understood the ways of the Christ, you know, and the ways of Abraham. He walked on by and he said, "Oh, so much complaining."
That would be such a heretical pronouncement. Somebody observed, "You guys are having a ball. You should recognize what pleasure you're getting from this. Do it, and then you have to redo it and redo it."
Well, yeah.
Because other than that, it's really serious.
Well, it's really strange when you look at the signature consciousness of, you know, Eastern Europe, Northern Europe, mm-hmm. right? Mediterranean Europe, mm. right? English Channel Europe, Atlantic Coast Europe, and all the personalities of the, you know, African subcontinent. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we would like to imagine that we have reason, we have science, we have religion and spirituality. We have profound transmutative tools for consciousness. And yet, we cannot apparently break free from these morphic resonances, mm-hmm. acculturated morphic resonances that are extraordinarily tied to, right, the geophysical Gaiac field.
Yeah.
Wherever you look.
Keep being recreated.
Yeah. I mean, the replication of, you know, Rio de Janeiro consciousness, right? South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, Greenland, Iceland, Canada. Everyone has a kind of a flavor.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even in the Northeast, you've got all kinds of flavors,
mm-hmm.
right? It's like Vermont,
ooh.
New England,
yeah.
but there's also Maine, New England, you know, mm-hmm. and different flavors amongst them, you know. Mm-hmm. And you can cross the Connecticut River and you're like, whoa, what was that?
What happened?
What just happened? You can, right?
Yeah.
You can cross from, you know, New Hampshire to Vermont or the other way and go, hey, what just happened? It's palpable.
That's a nice thought.
So how much of the the persona or the quality of the consciousness, the repertoire of behavior is affected by homeopathically, right, macrobiotically, affected by the geomagnetic eminences of the ley lines of that place, of that area, including the pollen count and the seasons and the food and the typical flora and fauna or invasive species, access to water. We think we're so, right, individuated, right? So independently minded.
Right.
But we're not. We're just not. As bacterial and viral protuberances of what's in the gut, right? What the metabolic landscape is in the gut is how intimately tied to the quality of consciousness.
Why did Texas turn out the way it did?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and how is everyone, of course not everyone, born and raised in Texas, turns out to be Texas?
I don't know.
How does that happen?
So profoundly and consistently.
It's incredible. I mean, you'd think that, you know, you end up in a certain kind of crisis. Let's say you're a transgender person, and you've known it since you were prepubescent. What am I doing in a boy's body? What am I doing in a girl's body? You know, those are very difficult, disruptive, right, crises, as in sexual identity and gender identity, to have to deal with if you've been planted in the wrong gender, right?
Well, if you've been planted in the wrong gender in the wrong part of the country.
It can get really bad.
You're really deep shit then.
It can get really, really bad. Yeah.
Well, I think that really has a lot of weight in what I think about the West Coast and what it's sitting on, the fault lines that it's sitting on.
Yes.
I visited the giant redwood forest with Rosemary Duff. We went on a tour of the wine country and then rented a car.
What fun.
And we went up to the Rockefeller, bought a piece of ground that houses 7 of the 20 biggest fucking trees on the planet.
Nice.
And there was nobody there.
Yeah, right.
And so I measured them. My wingspan. This is about 6'4".
Okay.
And some of those trees, it took 7 times.
Oh, God.
7 wingspans.
Oh, you had to go 7 times, 7 times around.
Six,
right.
42, 45 feet.
Diameter.
Around.
Yeah.
Right. And you can't see the top of the tree.
Well, that's circumference, right?
Yeah, circumference. Yeah.
Circumference.
You cannot see the top of the tree.
No, you can't see it.
Not possible.
No.
So we went to the, a headquarters or something.
Right.
Where you take a leak and had maps.
Right.
And on the map, they also showed the fault lines.
Oh, yes.
And the trees.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that the trees, the big trees, are all along the fault line?
Oh, interesting. Wow.
And I said, I got it.
Hmm.
There's so much fucking energy from these plates.
Yeah.
Banging together.
Mm-hmm.
It's creating these monster trees.
Yeah, sure.
So, who can rest easy out in California? Running around like crazy. There's so much energy coming up.
Yep.
No wonder they're out ahead of everybody. There's no stability.
Yeah. Well put. Yeah. Hanging around the San Francisco Bay area from the different vantage points. You know, if you're in Berkeley, you can go to the what's called Indian Rock and look out over the bay. You can go to Mount Tam across the bay in Marin and see wild expanse, because you can see the ocean if you go high enough to the right, and then also, you know, Marin and the Bay and San Francisco. I mean, it's just, whoa, it's quite an expanse. And Mount Diablo, which is a little further inland, on a clear day from Mount Diablo, you can see the Cascade Mountains. Mm. Beyond, you know, Shasta and beyond.
Wow.
And, yeah.
That's a view.
Yeah, so you...
Awesome.
Just the Gaia sphere of, you know, that kind of expanse. Mm. That absolutely creates, you know, shifts in culture, mm-hmm. right?
Well, I did, because for about 8 years, I drove out every summer to Colorado to work on the cabin, build it, come back. One of the most amazing things is that the Rocky Mountains, there's no wear signs on the streams.
Hmm.
They've been around for millions of years.
Yeah.
But it has not worn any rock away.
Wow.
They're still sharp and broken. Now, if you go in the Adirondacks, around the Finger Lakes region,
yeah,
you can go to places where there's a 100-foot wear mark of the water wearing away the rock.
Yeah.
That's fucking forever. A little trickly stream. This is not a big bottle of water. This is a little spout. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
And so if the East Coast has a little bit of a resistance to the dynamics of things, no wonder.
Yeah.
You're sitting on something that had the Blue Ridge Mountains and the Alleghenies, fucking mush pots. They've been worn down.
Yeah, right.
They're not very hot.
No.
And they have vegetation on them that grows.
Yep. Right, to the top.
Yeah. Walk around the Rockies and see what happens. You go up and there's nothing. Eventually you get the fucking grass after the aspens.
Hmm.
Up there as high as you can get the growth.
Yeah.
Well, we may have hit on something we can publish.
Yeah.